Hello and welcome, welcome, welcome to this edition of Side Retired, the MLB podcast. It is Dylan joined alongside James and Jack. And today we are going to be breaking down the top 10 second basemen in baseball. Last episode, if you scroll right below this, you'll see our interview with Ken Davidoff of the New York Post, as well as you'll see as our top 10 first baseman episodes. We're really excited. If you haven't checked out either of those episodes yet, definitely totally worth looking at those right below. But today we're going to be talking about our top 10 second basemen. You can find this episode on Apple Podcast, on Google Podcast, on YouTube, on our website at sideretiredpod.com. Twitter is sideretiredpod. Yeah, pretty straightforward. James, Jack, how are you guys doing today?
Doing well, Got a great list of second basemen for y'all. I think you're really going to enjoy.
Jack is muted.
Episode number 4 with the, with the new group. So, looking forward to it. I think we've hit our stride. I think everyone's doing great. Still amid a lockdown, but holding it together.
I think what you're going to notice with this episode, last one, when we did the first baseman, you had the Freeman and Guerrero debate at the top. This one, you're going to see we are universal with Marcus Semien at number 1, but there is really that second tier of guys. Nobody stands out super, super much. There's a lot of interchangeable names. There are some guys that are on like my list at number 6 that James and Jack don't even have on their list that I could definitely like see their arguments as well, because second base has a lot of guys that hit 260, 270, hit around 20 homers, knocking 70 RBIs and have an OPS plus around 120. And there's nothing that special except for the guys that we have towards the top of our list. So how about we talk about, we'll get it out of the way. Everyone will give their 10 through 1, and then we'll go into the actual specific lists and stuff like that. So, James, you go first.
All right, so going from 10 to 1, I have Chris Taylor, Jose Altuve, Jeff McNeil, Jorge Polanco, Jonathan India, Whit Merrifield, Jonathan India, Ozzie Albies, Ketel Marte, Brendan Lau, and Marcus Semien at number 1.
I got Tony Kemp at 10, followed by utility man Chris Taylor, then Ozzie Albies, Jake Cronenworth, Jorge Polanco, Jonathan India, Ketel Marte, Jose Altuve, Brendan Lau at 2, and number 1, Marcus Semien of the Rangers.
And I've got Adam Frazier at 10, Jonathan India at 9, Chris Taylor at 8, Brendan Lau a little low at 7, Jeff McNeil at 6, Ketel Marte 5, Ozzie Albies 4, my big guy is Whit Merrifield at 3, we've got Jose Altuve at 1, at 2, and number 1 universally was Marcus Semien. So we'll get Semien out of the way first because he is a little boring that we all had him at number 1. James and Jack, tell me what you think. Why is he universally the number 1 second baseman this year?
He rakes. He hits bombs. And simple as that. I like bombs. He hits bombs. I mean, the numbers don't lie. He played all 162 games in baseball for his Blue Jays last year. And his WAR reflects how well he played on the field, and I feel like it's just a simple answer when it comes to putting Marcus Semien at number 1.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with James. Like, he rakes is a pretty simple way of putting it, especially a position that lacks a lot of power with second base. 137 weighted runs created plus. He led all second basemen with 6.6 WAR, and obviously he had the big 45 ding dongs, which was a huge. Obviously, if you had that many bombs and you're playing a position not known for power, you're gonna stand out. And I think that's pretty much what happened with us. And he led all of our lists.
And initially, I was going to have him at number 2, except the guys persuaded me that this isn't a one-year wonder. He also was a top 3 MVP finalist in 2019 with the Oakland Athletics. And as such, he got rewarded heavily by the Texas Rangers this offseason. Got paid, I believe, like $175 million or something like that. He'll remain their second baseman because they also got Corey Seager, who we'll talk about next episode. But for now, Marcus Semien, universal number 1 second baseman, and there's probably not that much of a bust potential with him, and he's going to be your solid number 1 second baseman. The other second baseman in Texas that we did have very differentiating opinions on, that is indeed Jose Altuve. Maybe it's some off-the-field stuff. Maybe it's the fact that James is a Yankee fan in Texas. James has Altuve as low as, what was it? 9?
Number 9. He's number 9. It's not even a debate for me. These 8 guys in front of him are just much better second basemen. You look at Altuve's numbers over the last couple of seasons. He's already on the decline. He's out of his prime. I think I'm just hopping on the boat early before people realize it. I mean, he's a below average defender. He hits for power. Doesn't really walk that well. strikes out a fair amount. And I mean, yeah, I think I'm just hopping on the boat early. Altuve's decline is happening and it's here to stay. So that's why I have Altuve number 9 on my list.
I'm going to disagree with you there, James. I have Altuve at 3 on my list. You know, he was number 3 in second baseman with weighted runs created. He had, you know, a 5-2 war, which is excellent. He had over 30 home runs. I think obviously the defense, as you mentioned, like he's not the best defender, but it's second base, which I'd say besides first is like the least impactful position defensively. And I mean, Altuve's shown, especially against my Yankees, that he still rakes, he hits bombs. You obviously, I think people, he always gets the last laugh along with his fellow double play partner, Carlos Correa. You torment him, he will find revenge. He did that against the Red Sox in the ALCS this year. He obviously his small stature, he's been an underdog for lots of his career prior to his enormous cheating scandal. But I think despite that, he's still clearly the number 3 second baseman in all of baseball.
I mean, yeah, I think he's good. I think he's a good player, but I just think that there's 8 second basemen that are undoubtedly better than him. I mean, when you look at the guys like Brendan Lau, Starling Marte, Ozzy Albies, Jonathan India, Whit Merrifield, Jorge Polanco.
Starling Marte, no.
Ketel Marte. You know, they're both better than Altuve, so it doesn't really matter which one I say. But Jeff McNeil, I mean, these are all young guys. Guys that are just on the cusp of their prime, ready to just break out and be that next superstar for their team. Altuve, I mean, he's down. He's like stonks. He's trending downwards. He's like Dogecoin. You know,
he's only 31 years old. Like, he's not that old.
Like 2 years ago,
pretty solid within your prime.
But you have to think. A little guy, 31 years old, he can't keep like the numbers have already shown. He's going down.
Under 25 home runs for Jose Altuve next year.
Under.
That is going to be a hammer the over for that. That's
under,
setting the bar low.
Under.
You know that Marcus Semien and Whit Merrifield are both older than Jose Altuve, right?
Yeah, but Marcus Semien hit more bombs, so he's young. He's younger in my eyes. Home runs take years off your age.
Wait, Jack, so what's the bet? Because we also
Merrifield still stole 40 bags. I will bet you. I mean,
I know you and I both hate Altuve, but as much as I hate him, I will recognize the greatness.
I'll put $100 if he has less than 25 home runs.
Loser has to buy a Jose Altuve shirt if he hits.
No. He's not taking my money and putting it in his bank account. I'll buy an off-brand one. Like, I'll buy it from not an MLB site. But
I don't think you can do that, James.
No, you can do it from China. From China. I'll do that, but I'm not going to buy one so he can take my money and put it in his pocket.
I don't know. See, we're already getting into fun.
No bet. We'll just expose James in a year.
$100. $100, Stapp. $100.
$100?
$100. He'll hit under 25.
I will bet you $10.
Okay, fine. Fun.
Shake on it. Damn, there you go.
There you go. Deal. If you're on the YouTube, we just made a deal. And obviously, we will now keep that in the podcast predictions that we have running on Google Drive that goes along with the Frank Schwindel OPS Plus argument that we had last episode. That's now the second one. Another guy, James. Yeah.
Can I say one more thing? Whit Merrifield will steal 40 bags. That's my other one. If anyone wants to doubt me on that one.
Another guy you did just mention, though, before we get into Merrifield is Brandon Lau. Jack has him as high as number 2. I had him at number 7. Again, I'm in the area that I could interchange my 3 through 7 guys without sort of thinking about it too much. But Jack seems to be very high on Brandon Lau. I'll let you take this one away.
I think Brandon Lau, obviously Tampa Bay Rays, he was a little bit of a down year last year. I think 2020, for parts of it where he struggled, but then through the end, I think he obviously, I mean, for this year, not as like stellar, I think, as his short in 2020, but definitely like obviously an outstanding year. 137 weighted runs, 5.2 war, second in war and first in weighted runs. Obviously, a premier offensive second baseman. Then he also, to couple with that, he had 39 home runs, just shy of the 40 mark. So, like Semien, who is number 1 on my list, a super power driven player at a power lacking position. So, that's where he stands out, and he took the number 2 spot on my list.
Yeah, I also had him at number 2. Because Brendan Lau is what Yankees fans try to convince me Joey Gallo is. He hits bombs. He hits for average, at least a little bit of average. And that's really it. I think he's a great player. He hit lots of home runs, and home runs are cool, and home runs create offense. And so that's why I had him at number two on my list.
Sort of the exact opposite skill set, in that a guy like Whit Merrifield is not going to hit a bunch of homers. As you saw last year, he only hit 10 home runs. But if you look at the column all the way on the left of his baseball reference page, you've got 162 games, full 60 games, and 162 games. He plays every single day, no exceptions, on a Kansas City Royal team that is pretty useless. Imagine if you stuck him with like the LA Dodgers, with the Giants, something like that. Put a good offense behind him that'll force pitching to even throw him even better pitches, because right now you can definitely pitch around him in that lineup. But then if you look at it, he's only walked, 40 times and struck out 103 times, which isn't that bad of a ratio when you think about this sort of day of baseball. But if you put him as a leadoff hitter on like the Dodgers and have Mookie Betts hitting right behind him, I don't know, this might just be a big advertisement for me to have Whit Merrifield get traded to the LA Dodgers, because time to get this guy to the World Series, time to get him to the postseason, because he's rotting away at Kansas City. As James mentioned, I will bet that Whit Merrifield is stealing 40 bases this year. In full seasons, he goes 40. I don't know what happened here in 2019 when he only stole 20 bases, but the year before that, led the league with 45, led the league with 34. Whit Merrifield is a very scrappy, very good ball player, sort of a poor man's version of Starling Marte. So I would definitely put Merrifield, he's your quintessential second baseman, in that he's going to be short, he's going to be fast, he's going to be solid.
He's not short, though. He's 6'1". I mean, he's kind of a bigger guy when you think of second base.
And he can also play the outfield as well. So defensive, what's it called, versatility.
Jackson's eager. To say that, like, your argument there is that if Whit Merrifield is on, like, the San Francisco Giants or the Dodgers, he somehow magically becomes 40 points are added to his OPS plus to make him comparable to Simeon or Lau, I think is just, like, it's asinine. I'm sorry that, like, but I mean, like, if you have 8 Babe Ruths and you add Whit Merrifield, that's not going to increase his OPS plus by 40 points, let alone if you do it to the Los Angeles Dodgers. Well, he's a solid player. He definitely stole a lot of bags, but to claim that, like, the Royals are holding him back from being, like, a top 3 second baseman, or do you have him on the list? You have him at 3. Number 3. Yeah. So that's a pretty bold to take, right, to weigh 40 bags.
And my turn to make a bet. Team
ahead of Ketel Marte and Jose Altuve.
Whit Merrifield has an OPS of 800 or more this year.
OPS plus of 91, where the average hitter is marked at 100.
Telling you, he has an OPS of 800.
Half the war of Marcus Semien. Less than half of the.
I feel like OPS plus in Whit Merrifield's stance is just kind of like a stupid stat, because look, he has 184 hits, which means he, let's just assume let's just say he had 40 singles and he stole second 40 times off those singles. Those are doubles, essentially, with Whit Merrifield.
So 184, I feel like
OPS
plus 184 singles, 184 hits, 130 of them were singles. Like, it shows that,
turns 40 of them into doubles. So I think that's a stupid. I think OPS plus for Merrifield is stupid, because he still hit 280, like basically 280 this year.
Yeah, but it's like it values power hitting. And if you're only hitting 10 home runs and, you know, 130 singles out of your 180 hits, you're not going to be as valuable offensively as guys like Semien or Lau, who hit 40 plus. Like,
but he's a different type of player. Couldn't you make the argument that
he has 80? He's a different type of player, but he's a less valuable type of player. Stop.
Couldn't you make an argument, though, that he had 82 doubles because he had 40 stolen bases? Like,
he also led the league in doubles, too. Like, no one's even realizing that. Even with his, like, everyone's claiming, oh, he's a singles hitter. Apparently, he's the best doubles hitter in baseball.
Yeah, so I feel like OPS
plus. The problem, though, is that he's one of the worst home run hitters in baseball.
I will take a guy hitting 280 that slaps the ball around
every single game and had 10 home runs.
Yeah.
And that's...
I mean, you're a Yankee fan, so you're used to just the home run and strikeout mentality.
I think a proven approach is that home runs win ball games. So,
and if not in the playoffs, not in the playoffs.
Jose Altuve, who hits 30, Brandon Lau, who hits 39, Marcus Semien, who hits 35, you know, Whit Merrifield hitting 10. And we have, like, some of these other guys we haven't talked about yet who are clear, also, I would say, are much better offensively. And yes, I'll give you that Merrifield's defense is probably the cream of the crop for second baseman, but it's pretty. It's not that valuable at a position where, like, defensive impact isn't, like, weighed as much.
I mean,
I don't think he should be number 3, but I do definitely think that I think 6 is a fair spot for him on our list. I think that that's So 5-6 is a reasonable spot to put him. Because, I mean, I think he's just an overall good player, and looking at OPS plus isn't a fair stat. Also, one other thing, I think there's a new thing we need to start for our podcast. Whit Merrifield to break Cal Ripken's record of games, consecutive games played.
consecutively of 2020.
He's played two full seasons plus 2020 consecutively.
So that's like what, 300-ish? No.
Yeah, but he's already 32.
That's like 380.
Cal Ripken is what, like 3K?
I don't know. It's a lot.
I don't know if we're gonna get that far.
If he can play till he's 38.
I mean, granted, like consecutively. If you play three consecutive years, but he's played three now, right? One of them.
Yeah.
I mean, if you play four consecutive years, one short, and that's still impressive in this day and age, but it's no Cal Ripken.
I mean, the problem's also gonna be once he gets traded to the Dodgers, they're gonna platoon him a lot and they're gonna break the streak.
Once he goes easily to the Dodgers, you're gonna have the Billy Bean talk about yelling at him that if you steal bases and get thrown out, it doesn't do anything for us.
All right, moving on. We good with Whit Merrifield? We'll see what happens. There's clearly a philosophical difference there, measuring him.
Because how much success the Yankees have had the last 10 years hitting home runs, striking out 200 times a season.
James, the team that's that obviously the way to go. The other in the postseason this year went undefeated. I know they lost one game. I think that's a pretty.
Well, I mean, in like individual games.
All right, that's also such a skewed stat. I mean, like, no shit, the team hits more home runs.
Now we got the E.
we'll move on, but this debate is far from over.
Hey, Steph, do you want to hear a stat about this year's postseason?
Oh, no.
The team that scored more runs than the other team went undefeated this postseason.
All right, well, one guy that does know how to win this postseason, see, amazing transition there, and I had it ready. Ozzie Albies, where did we put him? I had him at number 4. Jack had him at number 8. Oh, here we go again. James had him at number 4 as well. Jack, why don't you go first?
James can go first. James, I'll let you go first.
Okay, so Ozzie Albies hit 30 home runs this year. 260. He's a great overall player. He can hit the ball at the park. He can steal bases. He does strike out a lot, which is definitely a negative thing. But, I mean, he's a switch hitter. And, I think he's just an excellent player. He's good defensively. And, I think he's just a great all-around player, can do everything at second base. Obviously, he excels at hitting the ball out of the park for second baseman. But I think he's just so well-rounded at everything, hitting for average. I mean, not well for average, but, like, hitting good enough for average, stealing bases and hitting home runs. So that's why I had him at number four on my list.
So the one thing I'll say about Albies is I think, like you mentioned, he's a switch hitter. So I have him pretty low on my list. Overall for the season, he had a 107 weighted runs created plus, 105 OPS plus. So that's like slightly above average offensively as a player. But the thing I'll mention though with him is versus lefties. So when he's hitting right-handed, he has an OPS plus, weighted runs. His weighted runs is 144. So like comparable OPS plus versus a 94 versus righties when he's hitting lefty. So one thing that we noted about Cedric Mullins is that this year when he had his breakout year is when he decided to make the change and just abandon switch hitting and like stay true to his stronger side. And honestly, I think if Ozzie Albies, I would be very intrigued. And like if he told me going into this year he was just going to stay as a right-handed hitter and just focus on that, his stats are so good already. I would probably bump him up. If you tell me right now who Ozzie Albies is just hitting as a righty, I would probably bump him up to number 5. That's 3 spots higher than I had him. He had a much better year versus righties. Versus lefties, he hit 320, 350 on base, 940 OPS, 144 OPS plus. So those numbers rake. So that's like the big problem I have is that overall, in like the grand scope, he's pretty much like a slightly above average league hitter versus if you take his one stronger split, he's much better. So if you go into next year, and I think if he considers making the permanent switch, he could be a force to be reckoned with and, you know, lead up to lots of these expectations that people seem to have around him being like some outstanding overall hitter.
I think another thing with Albies is why I have him so high is I'm assuming that Freddie Freeman will come back and that Ronald Acuna will come back and make a healthy return, because having those two thumpers in the lineup around him play a huge part in him being pitched to because I know most teams don't want to pitch to, would rather pitch to Albies instead of Acuna or Freeman.
Welcome to the Whit Merrifield on the Dodgers argument.
Whit Merrifield.
Nope. Next. Nope, go back player. To Albies. All right, Dylan.
All right. Albies what about four. the current Dodgers second baseman, Chris Taylor? We all had him hovering towards the bottom of our list, but still making it. I had him at 8. Jack had him number 9, and James had him at number 10. Anything really to say about him? He got paid this offseason, but that's more because he's probably worth more to the Dodgers than he is looking objectively as a second baseman around the league as a whole. Really solid piece, can play left, center, right, second, third, short, bounce around the infield and everything for them. So really just a solid overall player. We all probably just rewarded him for that, putting him towards the bottom of our list. Anything else you guys need to add about Chris Taylor?
I think that the only reason that – I mean, he was really like top five like for like the first like good part, like the first 110 games of the season. And then he had that huge slump where he went like 7-84 or like 7-87. And it just tanked his average. It tanked his OBP. So, I mean, yeah, I definitely think he deserves to be on the list. I mean, he's a great overall second baseman. He can steal bags. He hits the ball at the park. And he usually hits for a better average and can get on base well. So, I mean, that's why I had him a typical, like, around 800, 850 OPS kind of guy. And that's why I had him at number 10 on my list.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with James. Like, even with that slump he mentioned, his on base for the year was still 344, which is very, very respectable and is like a good mark. So shows he gets on base decent amount. He's definitely considerably above average hitter offensively. And then he does provide the versatility for if various pieces on the Dodgers do get hurt, he can fill in throughout the entire field, not just at second. And if, you know, the Dodgers decide to go out and pay one of the shortstops or they get Matt Olson, he can go and fill in any of these roles depending on where they have to play the guys around. But obviously, he's a big piece. And then I didn't want to consider that too much into my ranking because this is just purely second baseman. But obviously, like for Taylor's overall value, I think he probably cracks a little bit higher because of that added, like that he can play like 6 different positions. But with offensively, just speaking, I think he is around like bottom 10, which I think, I don't know where James or Dylan had him, but I think that's a pretty universal take for all of us. But definitely a solid overall player. We'll see what he does with his new contract on the Dodgers back this year.
All right, Jack, you're the only person that had Jake Cronenworth on your list. So give us the 30-second elevator pitch as to why he deserves to be there. I could definitely see James and I had him probably in our like 11 to 14-ish range. So not a huge disagreement, but you had him at as high as number 7. So give us, what's he doing?
So yeah, he's at 7, but like his stats, I think overall are pretty consistent compared to Albies and Taylor. Like his weighted runs, his WOBA, his on base are all like pretty similar to that. I just gave him a slight edge because like he is a true second baseman. He had an extra home run and like he did have a considerably higher WAR. But I think he's a pretty offensively, he's a pretty comparable player to Chris Taylor, which is why I had them, like, you know, they're within 2 spots of each other on my list. Obviously, he did fill in a couple of games at shortstop, which does add to his value considering how horrendous Fernando Tatis Jr. is at defense, but, you know, preview to a future episode when we do our shortstop lists. But I definitely think Cronenworth, if you look at his offensive profile, he is very comparable to guys like Albies, Taylor, someone else on my list who I have later on, Taylor, Tony Kemp, who just, he rounds out like this bottom of the list where it's a pretty weak offensive position. So a guy like him might not crack the top 10 on other positions, but to have, you know, a 116, 21 home runs, is 340 on base is solid enough where I thought he was deserving of the number 7 spot.
I think I was debating back and forth between Cronenworth and Adam Frazier, who was his teammate towards the end of last season. Frazier has since been traded to the Seattle Mariners, and I was the only one of us who fit Frazier onto his list. I had him at number 10. And really, when I looked at it, I said, as a Pittsburgh Pirate, if he continued that for the entire year, he no doubt would have been a top 10 second baseman. He hit 324. His OPS plus was 127. He had sneaky pop with the doubles, but not really with the homers at all. This is sort of like, shoot, I'm going back to Whit Merrifield, whatever. But then once he got to San Diego, things fell apart. And maybe it was just an awkward situation. As we just saw, they had Jake Cronenworth at second base. They had Ha-Seong Kim. They had Jurickson Profar. So the fit wasn't really perfect. And as we saw, the San Diego Padres really crumbled towards the second half of last season. So when I looked at it, it really was a split season for him. The second half was completely garbage, not really a top 10 second baseman, but the first half for sure put him probably if you continue that in the 6-7 range. Thus, I found a nice little even ground, fit him in at number 10. He's going to go to Seattle. He's going to do his thing. He's going to hit around 300. He's going to hit around, like, you know, 35 to 40 doubles, and he's going to be a solid everyday player for them. The Seattle Mariners are one of the interesting teams to sort of predict what's going to happen with them, which we'll obviously get into closer to the season. But Adam Frazier is going to be a big part for them, hitting leadoff, being their everyday second baseman, and apparently also pretty good in left field as well. But that's a story for another day, unless you guys have anything else to add on him. No? All right, another one of the big guys that we haven't gotten to yet. Not Starling Marte, as James referred to him as, but instead we're going with Ketel Marte. Pretty universal had him in the middle of the pack. Adam in at 5, Jack at 4, and James at 3. James, we'll go with you since you had him the highest. Tell us about Ketel Marte.
This guy's an absolute beast. He's a monster at the plate. Defensively, I mean, he's all right. He can play multiple positions, which I think adds value to him. But yeah, I mean, he is just a monster at the plate. I mean, look at his 2019 season. 329, 32 home runs. I mean, he's stuck in Arizona, which is obviously, I mean, I feel, need I say more, it's Arizona. I really, really wanted the Yankees to pick him up last year at the deadline, because I think that would have been a huge piece that the Yankees need, a switch hitting guy who can hit for contact, but also has a ton of pop and hit the ball at the yard. So yeah, I feel like, obviously, 2020 was a little bit of a down year, in his terms. But yeah, I mean, I feel like 2019, and then he was hurt in 2021. The average is still there. The OBP is still there. And the OPS plus is definitely still there. So I feel like we could see a huge year again from Ketel Marte if he can still stay healthy in 2022.
Yeah, I think obviously, like James, I think he would have been a great addition for any team. I think the Diamondbacks voice at the deadline, they were pretty clear to everyone that he was not available, like some of the other guys like Eduardo Escobar, who did get moved. I'm not really sure like what the status is now, like if teams are looking to deal for Marte and if the Diamondbacks are making him available. I think there's nothing really else to add to what James said. Like, obviously, you know, his stats are off the charts. I do want to touch on, though, like similar to Albies, like I said. So against versus lefty this year, as a right-handed hitter, Marte's OPS plus was over 200, which is pretty absurd. That's like Babe Ruthian. So versus righties was 112. So, I mean, if you're looking there, like 112 is very solid, but you're looking at like Hall of Fame, like greatest of all time numbers versus lefties. And obviously, I think that part of that you have to take into account is that late game, you have to assume most teams are bringing in the righty to limit that type of thing. So he's probably seeing right-handed pitching more. But, like, I don't know, if you're going to that year and you're that much of a superior hitter, one side versus the other, is it still worth it to be the switch hitter? I don't think it's as drastic as Albies, where I would highly recommend a switch. But I think, you know, it's got to be running through his hitting coach's head. Like, if he's doing this well as a right-handed hitter, maybe we just keep him at it permanently.
I mean, there's also the argument that he's in the Arizona Diamondbacks lineup where he can get easily pitched around. I know you mentioned maybe Yankees are a fit. Maybe Boston needs a second baseman. Other teams like that could definitely see a fit for Ketel Marte. James just texted me, don't forget to mention Jonathan India. So, James, we'll mention your boy, Jonathan India. Broke out in his rookie year this year, ended up winning the Rookie of the Year for the National League. Key piece in that Cincinnati Reds starting lineup. Maybe he becomes the next Joey Votto. Not like similar skill set, but you know what I mean, that he's going to be that face of that Reds franchise for a long time. I had Jonathan India at 9. James had him as high as number – or no, Jack had him at 5. And James hit him at 5. I guess I'm the low guy in Jonathan India. But James, you mentioned him first. Go for Jonathan India.
India had a monster year at the plate for the Reds. He really helped carry that offense this year with Joey Votto. And, yeah, I mean, I feel like the numbers speak themselves. I mean, his rookie year, obviously, I mean, this is only a year of work. 270 average. I mean, the OBP is really insane for such a young hitter. 71 walks. I mean, the strikeouts are definitely a problem. But still, I mean, he was able to have an 835 OPS, 21 home runs, a nice number of RBIs. He also stole 12 bags. So I think that India is just a great overall player, and he'll be a big piece for the Reds moving forward if they want to try and make some money moves in the NL Central.
Yeah, I had him pretty high as well, same spot as James, number 5. His weighted runs created plus likes him slightly better than OPS plus 122 versus 133. His slugging 460. So obviously, like James said, like the overall OPS for him is definitely very solid. I think he ran away, was definitely the favorite for, and like the solid choice for rookie of the year. So something definitely to build upon. 21 home runs at like a position where it's not a lot of power. We have people arguing for 10 home run Whit Merrifield. But, you know, obviously Jonathan India, I think it is his only his rookie year. So I expect him, you know, to build upon this, like James said, like to obviously have a better year. But I think, you know, in a lineup that hit a lot of home runs, we'll see what the Reds do because it seems like they are going to be rebuilding. So is it going to become that he's able to be easily pitched around and then he's going to have to draw more walks and, like, limit the strikeouts? But I guess we'll see it this year. But I definitely have Jonathan India as a very high on my list.
I think with me, I just figured there's guys like Brandon Lau, Ozzie Albies, Ketel Marte, who have done it consistently year in and year out. So I just went with that sort of experience, but could definitely see if Jonathan India puts up another year like he did this year, all of a sudden he's pushing that 5-6 range for me, but I just kept it pretty conservative with him for now. Jeff McNeil, here we go. I was the only person that kept Jeffrey on my top 10.
No, I had McNeil on my top 10, actually.
You did? All right. James kept him at 8. He's ahead of Altuve. I forgot about that. Yes. But 2021, I'll get this out of the way. McNeil was bad. Who knows what was going through his head? Maybe it was Francisco Lindor decided to choke him in the locker room. I don't know. Maybe that had part to do with it. Maybe the fact that they argued over if it was a rat or a raccoon. Oh, all of a sudden the Mets traded for Javier Baez, so McNeil felt like he didn't have a home. And now there's rumors right now of Jeff McNeil getting traded again. 2021 was a bad year for Jeffrey McNeil. He could like use the Men in Black pen that could make him forget that it happened. He'd be one of the prime guys to do it. Because if you look at his 2018 through 2020, he was consistently hitting above 300. He had an on-base percentage around 380. He had an OPS plus of in the 130 to 140 range. Those are elite, pretty good second baseman numbers. That would be comparing him with Lau, Semi, and Altuve up there. It's just 2021 was bad, really bad. So the question is, do you take his track record? In the minor leagues, he could always hit as well. So it's the track record of his 2018, 2020, and coming up as a minor leaguer versus 2021. If we were solely basing off of 2021, Jeff McNeil is not a top 10 second baseman. I'll say that right now. He did not have a good season last year. He hit 7 homers. All of a sudden, you go back to his last full season, 2019, he hit 23. So obviously something changed. Something went wrong. I'm going to be the type of person that banks on him doing well, but I totally get Jack's argument that Jeff McNeil stunk last year and thus he's going to be not a top 10 second baseman. But I would not be shocked if all of a sudden he hits 330 next year, hits 20 homers, and Jack has to admit that he's back up there being in a top 5 guy. It's similar to the DJ LeMahieu issue in that everyone had LeMahieu number one last year. And I think if you were a second baseman still, maybe 7th, maybe 8th, I think people would have definitely dropped him. We'll see. We won't spoil the third base episode, but he's a fringe top 10 third baseman right now. So people are being very harsh with dropping guys after one really bad season. I'm not dropping McNeil all the way off my list. Maybe that's the Met bias in me, but McNeil, number 5.
I just realized I had a massive brain fart and left LeMahieu off my list.
He's a third baseman. Don't worry. You're good.
Oh, he's a third baseman? Okay, sick. All right, never mind. Awesome.
The one thing I will say about McNeil is that consistently for his first 3 years, he had around like a 330 BABIP, which is like it's batting average on balls on play, which is basically just to show like how lucky you can get, because if, you know, if you're hitting into the shift or you're obviously that's not really luck because like you're predicted, but if you're constantly getting robbed of hits, it's supposed to show that. And then this year, McNeil's batting average on balls in play dropped down to 280, which can be revered as if you want to say like he's one just hitting into like plays that are more like if he's hitting the ball on the ground a ton, your batting average on balls in play is going to go way down. But it could also be viewed as just like obviously he's getting a lot less luck this year. So if you want to say like obviously if he has more of like a positive regression and goes more towards the mean he's had towards his entire career, he had in 2019 and like it's probably his best season, and then both in 18 and 20, you can have the, if you want to see the logic in Dylan's argument that he does have a bounce back next year. I don't see him bouncing back to the point where he, you know, he's hitting 20 plus home runs, over 130 weighted runs created plus, back to being like a 4-WAR player. But I would definitely say like there's definitely a solid chance McNeil comes back, you know, and puts up higher than the 93 he posted this year and like showing as a below average hitter. I think he definitely is like skill wise better than the stats he posted, but I don't think I'm ready yet to put him back into the top 10.
I think what you're also seeing with our list is that there are different approaches. I'm looking a lot towards what do I think they're going to do in 2022? And thus there is a little bit of element of like prediction. Obviously I'm not going as far as Dovid did last year when he's like, Travis d'Arnaud, Travis d'Arnaud is going to be the number one catcher. Why? Because I said so and I like his haircut. No. Go back to last year's article. You'll You'll see Devin made that argument for Travis d'Arnaud's number one catcher. But in general, Jack is very heavy into the analytics. James probably lies somewhere in between us. And then, well, James is becoming very analytical.
When he needs to get Altuve,
when Altuve needs to get down to nine, the analytics.
These are called AA or AAA anti Altuve analytics. That's what I'm going on. So very good system. I feel like a lot of baseball fans would agree with me on that. So yeah, you know, I keep it 100 on this right, podcast.
A couple of guys that we'll just run through really quickly that we either had at our like number 10 spot or just missed the list. None of us had Gleyber Torres in our top 10. Really quickly, can he bounce back? Is he a bust? What's up with Gleyber?
Trash. Sorry.
I need to say somewhat of a bust because like this post made me cringe. I saw like someone retweeted it the other day that like it was after like Gleyber had the historic 2019 postseason where he was just like 0-4 bonds. MLB, I don't think there was like, I don't know if it was like a real projection system like Steamer or if this was just like some writer throwing out numbers, but like they said from his age from like 2020 on, he was going to hit over 40 home runs, have like an OPS over 1,000, which like Gleyber Torres, you know, there was the Jared Carrabas meme where like he went from like May something to like August without hitting a home run. So like the power that he apparently had against the Orioles in 2019 completely vanished off the face of the earth. And then obviously there's now the popular argument that, you know, in the 2 weeks he played second base after the Yankees said, yeah, you can't field the ground ball for your life, you're done at shortstop, that he apparently had, like, he had over 360. He found like a bit more power than he had early in the year. I'm not like buying too much into that argument. Obviously there is like the mental aspect of like having like that A-Rod will explain to you about like how playing shortstop versus second base drastically changes your hitting. Obviously there is an aspect where like if you're the captain of the infield versus if you're playing over second, there is like added pressure, and I think there was some of that taken off of Gleyber. I'm not willing to say that's going to bring him all the way back to like being an MVP candidate, going to hit over 40 home runs, but I did have him as an honorable mention on my list because I do think at a position that lacks a ton of power, Gleyber seems like he's focusing heavy on like the Yankees new hitting lab. He's working out with Aaron Judge a lot this offseason. I will say he had maybe has a bit of a better like year than he did last year, but probably going into 2020, I would have had him in the top five on my list. He did not touch anywhere close to that this year. We'll see next year, but I would not say Gleyber Torres hits more than like 25 home runs as like his ceiling.
James, give us the opinion on the guy on the screen if you're watching on YouTube, Jazz Chisholm.
Oh, yeah, he's a great young player. I think he has a lot of potential. You know, when he hits the ball, when he hits it, obviously, it goes very far. He's got a lot of pop. The strikeouts are a major problem, along with his inability to walk. I mean, his OBP is only like 50 points higher than his batting average. But yeah, I mean, he rakes. He's obviously only 23, about to be 24 years old. And I think there's a lot of potential in this Marlins youngster. I think he could be a superstar one day for them, and he's a great guy for them to build around and hopefully be competitive in the next 2 or 3 years.
All right, there's two guys left on our top 10 that we haven't mentioned. Jack, will give you this guy because you're the only one who probably even thought to put him on your list. Tony Kemp is your number 10 second baseman.
You know, I liked Kemp as an overall player. Like, I thought he had a pretty decent year last year. Not great with the power numbers, but I think the WAR, the 3-4, gave him enough to put him at the number 10 spot. OPS plus 126, so that definitely held a lot of weight for me. I think you could make the argument to put him higher. I just thought that like guys like Taylor, Albies, Cronworth, they had more of that track record, and they obviously are they're more well known as like being the higher hitting second baseman. But with Kemp, obviously the 8 home runs for 2021 definitely was a bit of a glare. While I'm not like a huge counting stats guy versus like the 126, I think it definitely is something to buy into that he had an OPS plus of 126 this past year. So it's that was definitely the biggest weigh in for me. But then obviously we'll see if Tony Kemp is traded because like the A's seem to be selling a system, but I think he's decent enough player where he should be on your watch list for 2022 and see, you know, if he can crack higher depending, because like having those kind of peripherals for but only having 8 home runs, we'll see if like that translates to more success next year.
Yeah, I think another big thing about him is he walked more than he struck out last year, which is pretty incredible to see this year in this day and age of baseball.
Welcome to the side retired Tony Kemp versus Whit Merrifield, who will crack 10 home runs quicker challenge for 2022. The last guy, James Jorge Polanco, cracked your top 10. He also cracked Jack, but we'll give you the shot to explain Jorge Polanco making it.
I mean, this guy can hit. When he sees a pitch over the plate, he's looking to do damage, and damage he does. 33 home runs, 35 doubles. I mean, this guy can rake. 503 slugging. Maybe his OBP could be improved a little bit, although it is almost 90 points or 80 points above his average. He does strike out a good amount. Nothing outrageous. Only 118 strikeouts last year. But yeah, I think he can really rake. And obviously his defense isn't all too good, and that's why he got moved over to second base. But that doesn't matter when you have a 4.9 WAR and you hit 33 home runs with a 270 average at second base.
Yeah, I think just to sum up with James, and he obviously had over 30 home runs. WOBA was 349, WRC plus 122, like close to a 4 WAR. So definitely a really overall very solid offensive production season. He had to move over to second because obviously the lackluster defense at short, but definitely very deserving of being on this list with like lots of the weak offensive bats on it, who at the position. I would say he definitely has the potential to go higher depending on if he cracks, you know, he continues the production he had last season. But until then, I think 7 bottom top 10 is a pretty fair place for him at the time. But, you know, I think there's really nothing else to be said about him.
I think second base in general is one of those deep positions. We didn't even get to guys like Gene Segura. You've got David Fletcher. You've got Jonathan Scope. You've got a bunch of guys, Colton Wong, Tommy Edman, that are solid baseball players, but just not top 10 worthy. That maybe if it's a weaker position overall, they could crack the conversation. But for here, they're kind of left off. Maybe I'm half joking, but there's one guy I thought I should mention towards the end of the episode. No, it's not former Met Andres Jimenez. No, it's not Kike Hernandez, although these are, again, solid second basemen. I'm referring to the guy that missed all of 2021.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Did you even – did the name no, Robinson Cano?
No.
I mean, we're looking at the
– Mets fan just wants him to retire at this point. Like, is that not wrong?
I mean, looking at the top of the baseball reference page, it's the most impressive one we've seen. Of course, they all happened before 2015.
I mean, 2020, he raked, but I mean, I wonder why.
We know. That's if Robinson can open up 2020 numbers, he's a top 10 second.
2020, he was on the
really?
And it was 50 games.
I had no idea.
But yeah, he's on.
I had no idea he hit that well in 2020. Holy, oh my God.
And huh, you wonder huh, why.
Huh. Yeah, wonder so why. Wait.
Actually, dude, in 2018, he really wasn't bad. Like,
with the 303 Mariners, average.
2018, he had a good year, but I think there's a very high chance he was on the juice then, too.
Dude, look at every year before that. That was good. His OPS plus.
No. Above 100. He's definitely a – I'm not going to question, like, his early years.
2019.
His dude, prime years with the Yankees and later
2019 was his. 2019 was his only bad year, honestly. Like, and obviously
yeah, 2020. I wonder why he then decided to start taking the juice in 2020.
He'll be back on it this year.
Cano is going to be the type of player. We had this same exact discussion with Yoenis Cespedes last year, or actually
dude,
2 years
Stevie,
ago.
Stevie's going to give him the high-quality, undetectable juice. I think
Cano. Well, the thing Cano, is going to be
Stevie's going to be selling his coffee so he doesn't have to pay him next year.
No, it's going to be the same with Cespedes, where either he's going to become a top player again or he's going to be cut by June 1st and you will never hear from him again and there's going to be no in-between. So we just
How
figured,
many years does he have left on his contract?
Two more for two. $48
million. Oh, my God.
Don't worry, we gave them Jared Kelnick.
That really is the worst trade of all time.
Well, we're going to get to in a couple episodes. Jared Kelnick's probably not a top 10 center fielder just yet.
Yeah.
However, if we're still around for a couple years now, I would not doubt Jared Kelnick becoming like top 3 center fielders in baseball.
Kelnick literally hit below his weight this year. Below the Mendoza line.
He was bad this year.
Dude, he is not top 20, like top 30 MLB center
fielders.
Yeah,
but like he's a rookie. Like I don't think we're...
I'm not ready to bury him yet.
But like,
oh, I'm not saying bury him, but don't even put him on my top 30 list. Like,
oh yeah, for this year,
backup.
No one's gonna say that.
Jared Kelnick weighs 190 pounds and hit 181. Right there with the weight.
He was close. He was close.
I don't know, we're not getting into the weight argument that we did over at first baseman. If you haven't checked that episode out yet, that should be right below this one. You can find us at CiderTiredPod on Twitter. The Instagram is coming. James is going to click that button eventually. Our website is CiderTiredPod.com. Lots of cool articles coming out on there. You know, David wrote his 21st century Yankee team. We have a new writer, Evelyn, wrote why Carlos Correa should sign with the New York Yankees. Jack loved that article. James, not as much. Matt Potter has been great writing about the New York Mets. He wrote an article about their new partnership with Samsung, as well as the Buck Showalter hiring. There's a lot of fun content happening here. James and Jack and I will be back soon doing our shortstops episode, as well as if you haven't checked out our cool interview with Ken Davidoff of the New York Post, we really thank him for coming on with us. That was a kind, insightful interview that we talked to Mets Yankees Hall of Fame and all that fun stuff, because Ken, I believe, has a Hall of Fame ballot. So we did not have a Coco Crisp argument with him. For people who listened to Cider Tired a while ago, you know, even Ryan, when he guest appeared on a recent episode, said, oh, we don't do Coco Crisp anymore. Well, A, shows you how much Ryan has been paying attention to the podcast. Ooh. B, ooh. Don't worry, he's not listening. We're good. B,
oh, bury him, man.
B, Coco Crisp did not make the Hall of Fame ballot, which means we're going to have to latch onto a guy that's on the next year's ballot and start advertising for it already. We don't have the ballot in front of us just yet. That'll be a fun episode where we dissect the 2023 Hall of Fame ballot for an episode long in the future. But for James, Jack, Dylan, unless you guys have anything else to add, don't you dare say it. All right, with that, the side is retired.